I am kind of a compulsive eater. And I say compulsive eater because it's all inclusive. You know, it envelops all of us somehow. And that's what I need to hear a lot of times, is that I'm part of a program that the people here are so different from me in so many aspects, but we're all compulsive about our eating in some fashion, whether it's anorexia, bulimic, or whatever. And it took me a long time to figure that part out. I do have pictures, because Judith made me. Oh, I guess 10, 5, and 5, whatever. You could do 25. Anyway, yeah, so Judith made me do pictures and stuff like that. And, of course, we always just do what Judith tells us to do. Remember, we deal with Judith, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Anyway, I started many years ago, 24 years ago to be exact, I think, or give or take a couple months or whatever. I call my recovery date 9/16/92, which is part of my email address. And some of you realize that because that's the day I went into treatment and got exposed to 12 steps of OA in particular. But prior to that, I talk about how we heard the other speaker share about yo-yo dieting. I felt compulsive about my food from maybe up like age 5 or 6. I started my first diet when I was about 20. I'm sorry, about when I was about 15 or so, and I lost about 20 pounds. That's what I was trying to say. I lost about 20 pounds, and that was a big step for me. It was nothing. I gained it all back. We all know that happens. When I went off to college was when I really we heard the shit hit the fan. Okay. Basically, when I went off to college, that's when I really got exposed to it, because this was the first time. I don't know. This was like 1980, and it was the first time I had a microwave. How fast you can cook a hot dog with a microwave. So I got exposed there, and I had all the freedom to eat all I want, and because of it, you hear about the freshman 10 and the freshman 15, and the freshman 80. So that's about right. I think it was about 80 or so pounds that I gained in the first year of college. Didn't know what was going on, but because of that, I got ill. I was physically ill. I developed what we call sleep apnea. And in 1982 or so, whatever it was, nobody knew about sleep apnea. Now it's a common thing. It's very treatable and stuff like that. It wasn't at the time. And because of it, I failed out of college. I had to come back. I was, by this time, top weight was 330 pounds then. That's a drop in the bucket compared to what it was, what it got to later on, of course. But, the treatment for sleep apnea then was to actually lose weight. So I actually was forced to do it. And that was this was the big part of, my first real weight loss. I've lost, and I'm going to say lost because I don't, when I lose weight in the program, I don't like to call it lose. I say I'm relieved of so-and-so pounds or whatever like that. The first time I lost weight because I had no help whatsoever except for myself. It was sheer will, okay? And as we all know, as that yo-yo dieting continues, that will dissipates. It's gone after a while. So the first time that I lost was about 130 pounds or so, all by myself in Weight Watchers, okay? And it was very, very effective for a while. Gradually, I started to come back, and I moved here in 1987 to be with family, took on another job, got very nervous, very, very stressed out, continued to eat. After several years of that, I lost that job, because of it. I ballooned to, they guessed about 500 pounds or so. About 500, but they didn't have a scale to weigh me at the time when I went into treatment. But I went into treatment, and there I was. Okay, one of two guys, the only guy inpatient, surrounded by a bunch of anorexics, bulimics, and fellow overeaters, so to speak, but we're all compulsive eaters once again. And I went into that treatment, and these people accepted me. We went to meetings together. You know, there was a big old bus that they used to haul our butts to, every time. Two or three meetings a week, we would go in this big old bus that literally we had to seat us anorexic, compulsive eater, anorexic, compulsive eater for seating efficiency to fit us perfectly. Literally, okay? But I used to always joke that the bulimics got the window seats. And in a way, it's kind of true. It's pretty scary, but kind of true. These are the first people that accepted me. They took me to meetings. The first meetings I went to were how. They were how meetings, and I didn't know anything differently at the time until I got out of treatment 6 weeks later. But those how people accepted me just like anybody else did. The anorexics went to how too. They did the old food plan too. Just the same thing. I mean, it could work for anybody. All our variations could probably work, but we fine-tune them for what we need. So I got out of treatment on a Wednesday. Went to my first regular OA meeting that I've ever, gone outside of treatment. And Judith was there, and she's been there ever since. I love you, Judith. And Judith was there, and I was exposed there. These people accepted me as well. The unity of the whole thing is, regardless of who I see in this program, if I have something in common with them. That common peril, I think the big book refers to, is that common peril. We talk about, being shipwrecked, or whatever, and then being rescued. We are passengers on that ship. In one form or the other, I'm a passenger on that ship, just like any of you are. That's why I call myself a compulsive eater. Anyway, I'm trying to get back to that. Yeah, pass that around, please. Whatever. trying to get back to that. I was taken about 3 months later. I went to my first retreat in Gold Bar, which we're going back to again. I have not missed a winter retreat in the entire time, in some form or fashion. The last 24 years, I've gone to the winter retreat, either as a commuter or as an overnighter and stuff. I met my sponsor there, and the irony of that part is, I'm a wisecracking butthead of a New Yorker. And he was an old Kansas hayseed, so to speak. And we just hit it off perfectly because we complimented each other that way. He took me through those steps. And I just remember initially, do the third step together on our knees. And then he starts outlining with the four columns of the big book. And, he actually drew it on a legal pad, and we started going. I asked him, "How soon do I have to do this?" And he just looked at me and says, "How soon do you want to recover?" I was like, "That bastard." So how soon do I want to recover? I did the fourth step, and he took me through those steps. Through step nine, and then it's kind of on my own after that. The funny part, though, is. I got exposed to different parts of it, too. I was able to actually work on a recovery radio show for a while during that time. And one of the things that, I got exposed to different, to AA people, to, all kinds of debtors and anonymous, all kinds of 12-step programs I got exposed to. And I just remember, complaining as usual, because words are important. I always think that the words and how we actually read these are important. A lot of times I and others just tend to gloss right through them at times. And to me, when I read that part in the promises where it says we're going to be amazed before we're halfway through, I remember bitching to one of the guys who was the sound guy in that booth, and just bitching to him about, I'm halfway through the steps, and I'm not amazed. And he says, "Read where it is." Okay? He just looks at me and says, "Read where it is. It's after step nine. Halfway through step nine, dumbass." Basically. So that's what it takes. You know, for me, is I needed to go through that and actually make those amends, and some of them very scary. I had a cartoonist friend in recovery who would illustrate the steps, and the illustration he had for that was for step nine, making direct amends, was somebody being running away from a shotgun. You know, and that's kind of what was scary for me. The amends I had to make, some of them were living, and those are the easy ones, okay? But some of them actually were direct, you know, direct approaches to those people. I had to make amends to my brother-in-law, all 6'8", 260 pounds of him, used to be a lineman for the Seahawks. That was scary. You know, it went very well. Very accepting. And to this day, I can actually look him in the eye, you know, and on an equal basis because of that. You know, I had to make a living amends to my father. He was he had a stroke with me. He was 40. I was about 9 or 10 at the time. He had a stroke, and was kind of shut off in his own little world. It's really hard to make amends to somebody who really can't speak very well, you know, and really can't think. You know, it takes a lot of time. So that was the living amends. And when he died in 2010, I think it was, or 2011, you know, I was able to let him go. You know, same thing with my mom. Anyway, getting back to it, you know, we talk about, and I talk about, you know, different, you know, I've lost weight, I've lost or been relieved of over 100 pounds, I think, 4 times in my life, you know, 3 times in recovery. You know, Judith wanted me to share also about, you know, one of those things was, you know, I got to a point again where spiritually I was so unfit that I actually started gaining a ton of weight again. And I looked to the so-called tool of bariatric surgery. I had a gastric bypass. And it's, to me, it's just a tool. I remember somebody else in this program who also helped start that Wednesday night meeting who had bariatric surgery. And she said, yeah, but I'm still nuts. You know? She said, I'm still nuts. And that's what it is. It's just a tool. You know, what does nuts stand for? Not using the steps, basically. It's just a tool for me. It's just a tool, and it helped. I don't regret doing it, okay? And it saved my life at the time because, once again, I was over, at that time I was, well, they documented it at 530 pounds then, at that time. And I was able to lose the weight. This is a loss. This was not being relieved of. This was a loss, again, because I wasn't relying on my higher power for this. And I was relieved. I had lost again, probably about 150 pounds, and gained a good part of it back over the years after that. It was the giant shitstorm that happened to me. You know, once again, I lost a job, and I was working part time, and I was staying. My father had died, and I was staying with my mom, and then I lost that part time job. I lost the part time job, and my mother died. I found her. Passed away on the floor. Within the span of 3 weeks, I lost my job, my mother, and my home. Okay, so I call it the shitstorm. Okay, but anyway, what happened though was, you know, I was taken in. My family helped me out. I was taken in. I lived down south for a while. I had to check out for a while here, but I went to intergroup meetings here, driving from the peninsula. You know, and that's why when I hear people complain, God, I have to drive a half hour to intergroup, do a little service. It's like, you know, I have no sympathy for that, you know, at all, because I would drive an hour and a half to get to get to intergroup every month. But I also started going to meetings down there. You know, I had bag meetings for a while. You know, it got to a point where, you know, I was still, you know, before I always had hope, you know, but that last round I had lost pretty much all hope. It was basically a fuck it all type of thing. You know, I didn't care anymore whether I lived or died, you know, until I had to again, and I started going to meetings down south in Pierce County mostly and stuff and whatever, and I went back to my church too. That was a scary part, because I went back to my church because I needed to get spiritually connected again somehow. I needed to get spiritually connected. And, you know, it wasn't my church. It was a church in Belfair, actually. A little tiny church. I was raised a Catholic, and And I used to hear George Carlin say, you know, I was a Catholic until I reached the age of reason. But, you know, and I used to joke about it myself because it was dead on. But for me, you know, there's nothing reasonable about what I was doing to myself. You know, and so I went back and I got a sense of community with these people. Became active in the church, and I became active in Pierce County Intergroup as well, still in, because I only live in Federal Way, so I'm kind of touching on both intergroups a little bit. So I'm still active in both intergroups that way as well. How much time? What do we get?
10 minutes.
Oh my God, really? Wow. Damn. What's that?
You can have 15.
Oh, I was more like 5, but that's okay. you know, so I got active again and took it on and started being relieved of weight again. You know, I'm close to 100 pounds again. And then another shitstorm happened to me. You know, another shitstorm. People talk about, I was getting back on my feet financially, physically, and everything. And then I just moved into a little condo down Federal Way. And about a month later, I had a hernia that I didn't even know about. You know, strangulated. It became strangulated. I mean, I had a physical 10 days before that, and the doctor couldn't even find it. Didn't have a hernia. So, you know, and it became strangulated. I thought it was food poisoning. It wasn't. I went into septic shock and nearly died, essentially. There's pictures in there of me being intubated for 17 days unconscious in Harborview. I was taken to Harborview, which is very fortunate because then people could visit me if they were close by. You know, and of course it's Harborview, which just beats any other hospital around here. But, you know, the doctors didn't give me much of a chance to live. And I didn't know that till much later. You know, funny part is my sister was messing with my head the whole time because she was whispering in my ear, "Hey, Kevin," this is 2015, right? She says, "Hey, Kevin, it's 2016. I'm unconscious, pretty much. It's 2016. Donald Trump is president." Some things just happen for a reason. But she can listen. She told me I was literally just going, I have four older sisters, okay? Five moms in all is what I grew up with. You know, and they wonder why I have some therapy. You know, so they tend to mess with my head, which is just, it's fine because they have my best interest in mind, of course, at the same time. So getting back to that, several of my sisters came from across the country to help me out. I had other people, you know, in this program visit me in the hospital. I had my priest come from Belfair to give me communion. You know, there's little things like that I wouldn't expect. You know, I had to rehab. I was in Harborview for 5 weeks. And then many weeks later, I had rehabbing on top of that. I'm still not perfect, that's for sure. Well, physically, I've never been perfect. But you know, I'm much better off than I was. Because, you know, basically, they thought I was going to die. And so, I kind of look at that as anything I do nowadays is a bonus. It really is. It's gratis. That's all I need, you know, and to be able to come back into this program and see these people again, you know, the people that helped out and told me stories. You know, there's somebody in this room who told me many years ago I had given her a big book, you know, that I had an extra one, so I just gave it to her. I don't remember that. I remember doing that kind of stuff, but I don't remember the specifics. That person filled me in on stuff like that. You know, I had people come back, you know, basically got paid back in spades for some of the things in the service work that I've done in this program. You know, I can't imagine not being at least a part of this program at any one time. You know, this particular one, like I said, Judith and a couple others, you know, my sponsor, one other person, we all started that meeting down in right down the road here, actually. We started that meeting about 24 years ago, the Wednesday night meeting. We started it about 24 years ago, you know. And it's just Judith and I that are left. the original founders of that meeting, so to speak. You know, we're the only ones that will still come around. A couple of us have joined later too, but that's the church, that same church that I did my fourth step in, was that church on a Sunday. I remember that, the thermos of coffee and the big book, and that's about it, you know. And you know, my sponsor took me through the steps, and I've always been grateful for that. And I've been grateful for a lot of different things in this program. How I work my program nowadays mostly is the 10th step, and 10th, 11th, and 12th. And like I said, with the literal part of this, I mean, these words actually mean something to me. You know, the way that they talk, the 9th step, you know, it recommends wherever possible. Okay, wherever possible, it says. You know, because if it said whenever possible, you know, what do you need to make that amends, Kevin? Whatever. Right? Wherever possible. When the opportunity strikes is when I can make an amends. Okay? When it avails myself. Or I can make it available. That's another thing, too. 10th step. You know, Claudia hit on that, dead on that. You know, just reviewing the day, the events of the day. When was I fearful? With, you know, or, you know, if I owe somebody amends and stuff, I can take that too. The 11th step is really important for me. It's the most important. 5 minutes left. Okay. The 11th step is and I do it the way AA 12 and 12 suggests mostly. Because I'm a directional person. The big book is great. I love the big book. I also love that 12 and 12 because it explains things better. It actually outlines it. You know, part of I don't even go to that part, but part of so the 11th step, it talks about prayer and meditation. So through prayer and meditation to prove our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, pray only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Okay? You know, I can say that fast. I can come from New York. I can say it fast. But, you know, I can't gloss over that. You know, I can't gloss over that. And it says that, pray for all for knowledge of His will. So I do the direction that it takes in the 11th step of the AA 12 and 12. You know, I say my prayers. You know, and I ask, you know, with that qualifier, you know, if it's your will. You know, please do this. But the biggest thing about the prayers that I've noticed when I say my prayers is one common theme that I don't see a lot of times. And I never saw in Roseanne's promise, the OA promise or anything. The one common theme for me is, you know, help. I'm constantly saying, help me do this, help me do that. And God, for help. You know, the OA promise doesn't say that, you know, which is why I don't call it a prayer. And when people say the OA promise, I say the serenity prayer in my head at the same time. Because that's what I need. I need to ask for help, you know, in all aspects. I have, you know, another friend in program, another AA guy, who also, you know, would say that to me. If I bitched about a problem, he would say, have you asked for help today? This guy had the habit of handing out nickels to people with problems in the program. And he would just, you know, he'd say, a nickel. And he'd be like, turn it over. And that's what he did, just turn it over. It's just a reminder for me to keep turning my problems over. You know, the big book, somebody asked me one time, or we were talking about, you know, what is the purpose of the big book? You know, and they said it was, you know, to help us be abstinent. Well, it's clearly, once you get these words are important. There's actually a part in the big book where it says, the purpose of this book is to find a power greater than ourselves that can solve your problem. Whatever your problem is, it doesn't have to be food, it could be alcohol, it could be anything. You know, it doesn't have to be. And that's what the big book is. It's a way of finding your higher power. You know, and through the 12 steps, of course. So, I am incredibly grateful, you know, for what's happened to me. You know, but once again, getting back to the 11th step, the second part of it, it talks about it in the AA 12 and 12, about saying the prayer of St. Francis, the 11th step prayer is what we call it. You know, Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there's hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord, I may bring harmony, that where there is error, I may bring truth, you know, that where there is doubt, I may bring faith, that where there is despair, I may bring hope, that where there are shadows, I may bring light, that where there is What is it? Satisfaction. The standards may bring joy. Thank you very much. Lord, may I seek to comfort them, to be comforted, to understand, to be understood, to love and to be loved. For it's by self-forgetting that one finds, it's by forgiving that one is forgiven, it's by dying that one is awakened to eternal life. Okay? I repeat that because that gets me into the meditation part. And that's what it talks about in the 12 and 12 of AA. You know, the prayer is easy. That's just asking. The meditation part has always been the difficult part for me. And that kind of eases my way into that. So, 12 step. Once again, words mean a lot to me. In the 12 step, it says having a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps. Not a result, the result of the steps. You know, so that's important to me to know that. Because I've worked the steps and continually try to work the steps, I have that spiritual awakening for the most part. You know, it comes and goes, of course. You know, but I'm incredibly grateful for what for what this program has done for me. You know, for finding a power greater than myself to restore me to sanity and to solve my problem. So I want to close with something that you may or may not identify with. But it's a prayer. There's a call it the asking prayer or God's answer, and there's some copies of it in that the photo album that I have passed around that you're welcome to take as well. You know, and it's largely attributed to a guy named Roy Campanella. And it's like, does anybody know who that is?
Yeah.
Okay, not too many people. I would know who that is. He was a catcher for the Brooklyn Dodgers, who was. After 9.5 seasons, he was paralyzed in an auto accident. He was quadriplegic. And he wrote a great book. It's called It's Great to Be Alive, I think it's called. I read it as a teenager. And but this prayer is actually attributed to him for the most part. And like I said, there's copies for people to take if they want. But to me, it just reflects my attitude. It says, I ask God for strength that I may achieve. I was made weak that I might learn humbly to obey. I asked for health that I might do greater things. I was given infirmity that I might do better things. I asked for riches that I may be happy. I was given poverty that I might be wise. I asked for power that I might have the praise of men. I was given weakness that I might feel the need for God. I asked for all these things that I might enjoy life. I was given life that I might enjoy these things. I got nothing that I asked for, but everything I had hoped for. Almost despite myself, my unspoken prayers were answered. I am among all men, most richly blessed. So, thank you for letting me share.
Thank you.